LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Beyond politics, poverty, and war. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Dick Allgaier, who joins us to discuss his recent documentary, Hitomi and the God Particle, which records one of the most fascinating remote viewing sessions ever produced. Remote viewing is the ability to perceive sensory information across space and time. Trained remote viewers are able to see, hear, and feel distant locations and events using only their minds. Although this inherent human ability is as old as mankind, top secret US military units subsequently developed and structured methods of remote viewing as psychic spy technology. It was later declassified and taught to civilians, who now comprise the bulk of remote viewers worldwide. Hitomi and the God Particle follows psychotherapist Hitomi Akamatsu's quest to master various forms of remote viewing. She travelled to Hawaii in 2012 for intensive training with the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild. She demonstrated a remarkable ability to see, sketch, and describe things that were physically distant without any foreknowledge of the target. During her training, she was given a blind target, which was the creation of the Higgs boson subatomic reaction, the so-called God particle, as sought by scientists at the CERN laboratory in Switzerland. Then, she began a remarkable journey into the connection between matter and mind, and ultimately the consciousness of the universe itself. Hello and welcome, Dick, and thank you so much for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greg, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Today, Dick, we're going to be discussing your recent documentary, Hitomi and the God Particle. But before we do that, perhaps you could tell listeners a little bit about your personal background and how you got involved with remote viewing in the first place. Now, I've had Courtney Brown from the Farsight Institute on here a couple of times to discuss remote viewing, and I know that he's a friend and colleague of yours. And in fact, it was Courtney's books, early books, which came out in the 90s, Cosmic Explorers, and the other one was Cosmic Voyage. And they were certainly my route into remote viewing.
Well, I had a similar experience because in 1997, when that book came out, and I heard about it on an alternative radio show. At the time, I was a television news anchorman, what you in that part of the world would call a presenter. I was the news anchor working the 10 o'clock news. And I lived on the other side of the island here in Hawaii. So I had a half hour drive to and from work. And I would drive to work in the afternoon. And I would keep the news on in my car radio so I could know what was going on before I went to work. I'd listen to this all news station during the day and catch the latest stories just so that I could have an idea what we'd be covering as I drove to work. And I'd do my shift, and after the 10 o'clock news at 10:30, 10:45, I would get off work. And at that time, the late night show went from all news to an alternative national talk show that delved into the paranormal and alternative things and fringe element things. And one night I was driving home, and John Mack was the person being interviewed. He was a Harvard professor that did some work on abductions. And I didn't believe in such things at the time. But this guy was so well-spoken and so obviously intelligent that I listened and listened on the way home. And I thought, wow, this is a fascinating person. And I went in and I kept listening. I tuned the radio in my home to this channel and listened to him some more and bought his book. So I kind of became a fan of that kind of show, mostly for entertainment value, just because it seemed so strange. And I didn't believe it or disbelieve it. I just had to kind of an open-minded skepticism. Well, I'm not sure about this. And I heard one night they were going to interview this professor from Emory University in Atlanta named Dr. Courtney Brown, who had been taught remote viewing, which is what they said was the ability to perceive things psychically across space and time, to see and hear and feel things, and that he had remote viewed aliens. I thought, well, that's interesting. So I listened to that broadcast and I bought the book and read it. And I thought, if this is true, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something if that was true? And then I heard that Courtney Brown was teaching classes, and I went to his Farsight Institute in Atlanta for a week and became more and more intrigued. When I got back from the one-week training with Courtney Brown, someone emailed me, and I don't know how I got on this list or how I contacted them, but in my inbox was someone saying, there is a former military viewer here in Hawaii who's going to be giving a lecture this week, and it's free. And they gave me the details. So I went and listened to this guy, and wow, he was really credible. And he said, I'll be offering some classes. I don't want to charge money for it, so there will be no money involved. You can pay for the paper and pens that we need, and we'll rent some tables. So you can pay $20 a month to rent a room, and I'll teach you this. So I trained with him for 15 years. It's been going on 16 years now. A gentleman named Glenn Wheaton. Are you Irish, Greg?
Yes, I am, actually.
My teacher, Glenn Wheaton, is not from Ireland, but he is of Irish heritage. A very interesting fellow. He was in U.S. Army Special Forces intelligence, in a very secret program.
Now, Dick, you've explained a little bit about your personal background and how you came to remote viewing in the first place. So perhaps just for benefit of listeners who don't know, perhaps you could just shed some light on the actual process of remote viewing, what that is, how it was developed, and what it's been used for.
Well, there are several definitions or descriptions of remote viewing. We say that it is the ability to perceive sensory information, sight, sound, smells, taste, textures, and emotions. The ability to perceive sensory information about a target that is distant in space and time, and it is the ability to be able to do that on demand. So when we remote view, someone will take a description or a photograph of a person, an object, a place, an event that is distant from the viewer, about which the viewer knows nothing. They'll put that in an envelope and give it a coded number, and then have the viewer describe that location with no foreknowledge of it. It's very important that remote viewing always be done under what we call blind conditions. So you can't give a viewer a hint. You know, we wouldn't say, you're going to remote view a gentleman in the UK. Tell us about him. No, we would say you're allowed to know nothing about it. So it's this ability, it's not exactly psychic, but it's like psychic. I mean, being psychic is a relation to that. We call it a natural communication skill. And it was developed by the U.S. military, although people have been doing it throughout time. It's a natural thing, and I suspect that you have probably done it, and many of your listeners have probably done it. I would ask you, well, Greg, have you ever done any formalized remote viewing training? Have you ever tried it?
None whatsoever, no. But I know what you mean. I may have unwittingly done it.
Have you ever had a moment where you just knew something that you shouldn't know? For example, a friend that you haven't talked to in 5 years, you suddenly think of them or look them up on Facebook out of the blue, and then they call you 5 minutes later. Oh, I was just thinking about you.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a very common experience, actually, even amongst hardened skeptics and materialists.
Yes. It's because we all have a subconscious awareness, and we believe, this is what we're taught in my school of remote viewing, that everyone has a subconscious, and that consciousness is a dimension. So all information in consciousness is a dimension within our universe. All information is there. You have a primary physical consciousness that is interpreted by your brain, and it's focused very much on the here and now. It's sort of like when you watch a video on YouTube, you play the video and there's that little dot at the bottom line that goes from left to right and moves across the screen. And as it moves, you're seeing that individual frame, and those frames make up the reality or the plane of that video. You can stop that video and you can move that cursor or that dot backwards and replay that video, or you can move it forward and jump forward in it. What that dot, that cursor where the now is playing on the YouTube video or any video on your computer screen, that's like our physical consciousness, like our brain. It's focused on the here and now, and it's necessary for that to be so that we can exist in this three-dimensional universe, so that you can avoid danger, find food, you know, hear what your spouse is saying. You're living in the here and now. But your subconscious has a foot in that dimension of consciousness where all information is gathered. And I think modern humans have been taught to not listen to that, where maybe people in the past and, you know, shamanic people have had the ability to listen to that subconsciousness. And it's kind of been trained out of us. And what the U.S. military did was figured out a set of a disciplined way to train yourself to communicate with your subconscious so that you can, in essence, put your consciousness, your focus of awareness, to a different spot in that YouTube video. You can move it back, or you can move it forward, or you can move it over here, or you can move it over there. And if you're very quiet and you are disciplined with this protocol methodology, then you're able to perceive things about a location that is distant from you.
We're also, as I mentioned at the top of the show, going to be talking today about a new project, a DVD that you've produced. It's called Hitomi and the God Particle. A remote viewer perceives the Higgs boson event. Perhaps just as a precursor to talking about that, you could just tell us a little bit about this Japanese lady, Hitomi, who came to Hawaii and received remote viewing training, because she is the remote viewer who's at the center of this new film of yours.
Hitomi is a very interesting lady. She's an extremely intelligent young lady from Japan. She is a clinical psychologist. She's fluent in English. Her native language is Japanese. She was interested in remote viewing and doing searches about remote viewing on the internet. She was led to our group, which is the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild. We have a website, which is www.hrvg.org, O-R-G. So HRVG for Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild. We're a nonprofit organization, and we're dedicated to learning about remote viewing and teaching remote viewing and doing projects. And we try to keep money out of it so we don't charge. So this woman from Japan contacted one of our members and said, I've trained in other methods of remote viewing. I'm interested in learning your method. Could I come to Hawaii? I have some time. If I came for a few weeks, would you be willing to teach me? So several of our instructors volunteered and said, oh, it sounds interesting. She sounds like a very intelligent lady. We're kind of like, if someone shows an interest, a genuine interest, and they're motivated enough to come to Hawaii and obviously intelligent, what the heck, we'll try it. So she came and stayed with us, and she's very talented. She was a natural. While anyone can do this, she was very good at it. And in the course of her training, we gave her a number of what we call validation targets. These are simple targets. One of them was a monkey house at a zoo in like Cincinnati or somewhere. And she drew the enclosure and drew the monkeys and drew the trees. And she described that. We gave her one that was a huge forest fire. And she drew the fire and described the smoke and flames. We gave her Martin Luther King Jr. giving his speech. And she described a man giving an impassioned speech and holding his hand up. And people are listening to him and they're fervently agreeing, but some disagree. And so she showed a very good ability to remote view targets about, you know, that she knew nothing about. And we gave her some advanced training. And in the course of this work, she was up on a hill in a forest above Hawaii, kind of secluded at a house where there was no cell phone service, and it was a very quiet place. And I was watching the news, and I saw this Higgs boson event on the news. So I thought, well, I'll give that to her as a target. I don't think she knows that that's happening. So I gave her a set of letters, DVRG, dash, I can't remember, RTLQ or something. What we do is we generate a random letter or number sequence, and we assign that to the target so that we can just give them, the viewer, these random letters and numbers so they won't know anything about the target. So this was an advanced training target that she did, and I felt that the accelerator there in CERN, Switzerland, would be at the CERN facility in Switzerland, would be an interesting target. Very complex, the biggest machine ever made by humans, incredibly complex scientific thing, yet it's looking at such a small little bit of nature, the creation of this subatomic particle. So I didn't set about to make a video out of it. I just thought it would be an interesting target to challenge her. And it just so happened that she was at a very advanced part of the training where you work with pencil and paper for about an hour or an hour and a half, and then you put down the paper and you go into an altered state where you go into a near sleep state and you try to experience the target. And I left her alone with the target because under our protocol, you can't have anyone there who knows what it is. And I forgot to tell her, okay, go ahead and work for an hour on this. And she worked for about 5 or 6 hours. And she came out with 60 pages of data. So it was a very, very interesting target that she came up with. So that's how that came about. And that's who she is. She's a Japanese viewer, super talented lady. She's back in Japan right now. She doesn't live here in Hawaii with us. And we're looking forward to doing some more work with her.
You may have chosen that target because it was just something interesting in the news, but even for people who don't know a great deal about it, I mean, there could be some quite profound implications there, really. I mean, the super collider itself is like something out of a Bond movie. I mean, it's just incredible. As you say, you know, possibly the greatest technical achievement of this age of man anyway. And, of course, they were trying to verify the existence of a theoretical particle, the so-called Higgs boson, which is also the God particle in the title of your film. And they identified this in summer last year. So just with all of the implications of that, actually having this target remote viewed, you know, could yield some quite profound results.
Well, it was interesting because that particle that they're looking at, what they're trying to figure out, and I'm not a physicist, so this is above my comprehension, but how energy can create mass. How, you know, when you look at the desk that you're sitting at or your computer, you know, and I knock on my desk, it seems solid enough, right? But it's just a collection of energy. At least that's what physicists tell us. I've always wondered, I remember as a child looking at the Earth and the planets and looking at our physical stuff. How could this come into being? How could there be nothing, and then all of a sudden there is solid matter? what created the solid matter? And, well, God created it, or, well, we don't know, it was just here. And that's the fundamental riddle that they were trying to solve, is how do you have something that is energy or frequency and it burst into being as matter? And the Higgs boson particle, as best it's been explained to me, is that bridge between energy and matter. I didn't think of that as, I didn't think that that's what a remote viewer would get. When I gave the target to Hitomi, I thought she would describe, when you look up the super collider and you see those pictures of that big round ring that's about, like, I don't know, 15 meters high, and it's all that complex wiring, and it's got the big tunnel, and there's just a lot of, like you said, a James Bond movie, a lot of interesting, complex stuff there. And I thought that that would be interesting to see how a remote viewer would perceive that. And Hitomi, when she worked the session, did see all that. I mean, she drew all the structural things. She drew the grounds of the facility. She drew a water it looks like a water tank. It's some type of cylinder on display there that I didn't even know when I cued the target was there. I saw what she drew, set that aside, and I later researched on the internet and said, oh, that's exactly what she drew, and I didn't know it was there. So she drew the physical layout, and then she perceived and sketched the scientists and the workers and said they're doing something scientific and very technical with wires and cables, and it involves energy, and it's energy that makes small explosions. And then there's there's a scientist who's a balding man, and she drew Peter Higgs. And that was all well and good. But then she started getting into the subatomic level, and she took it to consciousness. And that's what astounded me when I looked at her session. And I didn't understand how good her session was when I first saw it. I didn't intend to make a video when I gave her the target. It was later when I learned more about how complex her data actually was that I decided, oh, I need to make a video out of that. So it's exceptional on many layers. It was one of the most interesting targets I've ever seen. Well, it's not something that not every remote viewing session is like this or is this good. I've done many hundreds of sessions myself, and I've seen thousands of sessions in the group I've done. And this one that Hitomi did was quite exceptional.
It's interesting. There is an interesting contrast here in that the method that she used to perceive these things is, in some people's minds, will be seen as diametrically opposed to the sort of science that's going on at CERN. But really, it just shows this is a continuum. These sort of phenomena there are things that exist in the physical world, and the scientists at CERN can measure those, but there's a continuum that goes beyond our five senses, and Hitomi's experience demonstrates this. And I think that actually you could probably gain more insight through remote viewing methods than actually with all the money they've spent at CERN, because I think that the super collider is as impressive as it is. I think it's an example of how, as a race, we're always trying to grasp, you know, the ineffable with our lizard monkey brains. You know, we're trying to explain life by dissecting it. We try to explain the universe by measuring it. We look down a microscope to try and find God or whatever it is. And I think it's a most interesting contrast that this, you know, diminutive Japanese lady, with just the power of her own consciousness, what she's managed to achieve, you know, compared to all the hundreds of scientists and the God knows how many billions of pounds spent in Switzerland.
There's a beautiful moment at the end of the video where this was before I told her what the target was. Okay, so she's working all this and she doesn't know it. The target she was working, as far as she knew, could have been it could have been a scientific, but it could have been a missing person. It could have been an archaeological target, you know, something back in history. It could have been the latest amusement park ride. I mean, it could be anything when you sit down to work. And I was showing her her drawings and said, what does this mean? What did you perceive when you saw this? And at the very end, I had turned off the camera, and she said, she had a very quizzical look on her face, and she said, you know, I think they need to study consciousness, otherwise they'll never get there. And I said, what? Tell me that again. And I turned the camera back on, and here is this petite, little quiet, soft-spoken Japanese lady in her Japanese accent, and she said, they need to study consciousness, otherwise they'll never get there. And that was just such a beautiful moment. That's when I realized I needed to make this video. I want to speak to something about consciousness and about remote viewing. And it's why remote viewing interests me so much. I'm a television news reporter for 38 years. And while I don't necessarily, I've come to disbelieve much of what is in mainstream. I think they omit a lot of things. I, as a reporter, have never knowingly reported anything to be untrue. That, as a reporter, that's your value, is that you never have a moment where you consciously, purposely report something that's false. You always try to project the truth. But remote viewing is empirical on a personal level. Greg, I could tell you about my remote viewing experiences, but you can believe them or not believe them. I mean, I might be exaggerating them or not telling the truth. You could give me a target and I could work it for you right now, and I could give you some data, and that might impress you, but it still wouldn't be experiential for you. When you sit down as a remote viewer, and someone gives you a set of letters and numbers, and it's something that you know nothing about, and you get these perceptions, and you draw something, and you describe something, and you have that personal experience, and then you're shown the feedback, and you see it the first few times you do it, it's an oh my God moment. It's like, oh my goodness, where did that come from? How did I do that? And it's at that moment that you realize that the world is not as we have been told. The universe functions very differently than we've been taught. Reality is not as instructed by our scientists and teachers, that they are keeping something from us. They're not teaching us our true nature and our true potential. And when you experience your true nature and your true potential by remote viewing, it changes you. It sent me down a road of discovery 15 years ago that has led to things that, quite frankly, I'm in a way, you're almost happier not knowing those things, not about remote viewing, but just about politics and the way the world runs. You know what I mean by that, I assume. Let me ask you a question. Because of the nature of your radio show, are people waking up? Is there hope? Are people starting to get it? Or is it just a small smattering, a small percentage of people? What do you think about that?
If you look basically at numbers, it doesn't matter whether you're doing something on the scale I'm doing it on, or whether you're David Icke or Alex Jones and somebody who's got a worldwide audience, it's still a small percentage of the global population. However, when you speak to people on a day-to-day basis, when you have a personal interaction, whether you know them or whether they're a complete stranger, if they don't feel that they're going to be embarrassed in front of their peers, who may feel the same but don't want to say it, many more people will admit that they'll say things like, yeah, I know things are not how they seem to be, whether they're talking about the headlines on the news or whether they're talking about the nature of reality. They'll say yes, you know, but mm-hmm. as always, it's like, but I got to go to work. I got to feed the family.
Yeah.
I've got to do this, that, and the other thing. And everything seems to be so important. I mean, that's what annoys me about the 10 o'clock news, you know, on the slot that you used to do, for example.
Yeah.
the conversation that you and I are having, that should be on the 10 o'clock news. Instead, yeah. It's always what these bankers and globalists and these other psychopaths are up to. Always it's about them and the mayhem they wreak. So the short answer to your question is, yes, there is hope. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this. But will we make it in time? I don't know.
I think Americans are hopelessly stupid and programmed. And it's not really their fault. They're fed bad food. And the mass media is so controlled now. Like you say, I do talk to a lot of, I mean, even the ones, most people realize something's wrong. Something is very wrong. You know, I talk to Americans, at least that are my age, I'm 60. You know, I say to them, don't you know that there's something wrong here? Your country is not what it was. It's changed. Things are not looking good. Yeah, well, but they're afraid to pull on that string and see where it leads. Here's a story. You know, you mentioned what we should be reporting on the 10 o'clock news. When I was a reporter, we would have a daily editorial meeting in the morning, and everyone had to come up like, what story are we going to cover today? And here in Hawaii, we have a lot of military bases. It's primarily the Hawaiian Islands were taken from the Hawaiians because it's midway in the Pacific. They used to fuel their ships here, and it's a great forward base. So Hawaii has a lot of U.S. military bases. And in the news, we would cover the 25th Infantry going off to Iraq or going off to Afghanistan for the third or fourth time. And they always have a ceremony where they bring out the flags and salute the flag and very patriotic, whoa, they're going to defend our freedom. At the same time, several years ago, our state budget was in such bad financial shape that they had to close down state government and close the schools several times a month. They called it a furlough Friday. On certain Fridays, state government would just shut down. The schools would close. Nothing would go on. We couldn't afford to run our government. And we did a lot of stories about that. Well, how do these state workers pay their bills when they're not being paid for this day? Mothers who have to work, their children can't go to school. They have to pay for daycare for their children so they can work and someone will take care of the kids. It's a hardship. One day in the news meeting, I said, well, we're going to cover the U.S. Army going back to Afghanistan for the third time. And I said, why don't we do has anybody considered that we're spending $1 trillion to send our military over there to kill people that don't really pose a threat to me in Makiki, Hawaii, Honolulu, Hawaii. But because we're spending this $1 trillion on these wars, we can't put our children in school and we can't run our state government. Why don't we do a story on the connection about that? And the supervisors just kind of chuckled. And that next story, it just ignored me. That's not a story that you would do. They all knew it, and that it's just a self-censorship.
Yeah, and if anything, you know, that situation's more pronounced now, and it's not just the US. I mean, it's in all of the Western industrialized countries, and they have different problems of their own in the developing world. But I don't see it changing anytime soon under its own steam. But as always with these corrupt, vast institutional things, you know, that they'll fall under the, basically under the weight of their own corruption in time. What that looks like, who can say?
It's probably going to be ugly.
Yeah, probably.
It's already ugly. It's already bad. I don't know. The 100th anniversary of the U.S. Federal Reserve is coming up. And I think they've had control for a long time. And it's all out there in the open. It's, you know, once you start reading books, and as a bringing it back to remote viewer, as I learned that remote viewing was true, it made me want to explore other things to see what else might be true. So if you just hook on to one thing, it could be the Federal Reserve, it could be the 9/11, it could be the Kennedy assassination, it could be the education system, it could be diet and health. I was very interested in that and learned that doctors don't know anything about diet and the cause of disease. I read books and watched documentaries and educated myself. I was a health reporter for many years and learned about that. And I'd talk about the importance of diet, and doctors would just, well, you know, no, we're going to prescribe this drug. So, yeah, people, the truth is there, and people can discover it if they just look.
Well, I mean, ignorance is the choice not to know, and there are more resources out there for people than there are people availing themselves of it, but that's up to individuals. But we turned back to remote viewing, as you said just a moment ago. One issue, it just occurred to me, it actually occurred to me when I was watching the beginning of your documentary, but it was addressed later on in the film, was that what changes when a remote viewer begins to figure out what the target is?
Learning to remote view is a very complex thing. It takes a long time. And there are developmental stages that remote viewers go through. When you first start out, you're taught to just listen for one and a half seconds. You quiet your mind, and the first thing that pops into your mind is the correct answer about the target. Your conscious mind is always chattering. You always have thoughts about, what is this? I think it's this, and I think it's that. And you'll get a little bit of data, and your conscious mind will color it. So early on, when you're a novice remote viewer, the things you're trained to put down everything that comes through your mind. And so you might describe something like, there's a man singing, but no, I think it's something else, you know, or I think, okay, it's lights and music, but no, I think it's this. The good data is sneaking in without you realizing it. So very often early on, it's what you think the target is not what it is, but the answer to it is in your session. You've inadvertently seemingly written things down like, well, I wrote that down because it occurred to me, but I didn't believe it. As you gain more and more experience, eventually you can figure out the target. It's not like putting a videotape in and watching it. And, Hitomi in her session did say accelerator. She did say Big Bang. But to her, she thought, well, this is some type of research facility with a really big, there's a big mechanical machine with little explosions taking part in it, and there are people watching it, and they're trying to solve some problem. So you assemble it by the description, not by your understanding of it. But as you get deeper and deeper into it, you do start to kind of figure it out. But there's always the risk of your conscious brain coloring it and giving you, your imagination butts in. So you've got to learn how to keep your imagination at bay.
Another interesting aspect of remote viewing is that you can't only probe what something is, where it is, you can ask questions, as it were, of like what something means, or perhaps why it's important. And that had some relevance in the viewing of the super collider.
Well, every viewer has a different take on a target based on their own life experiences and knowledge. So the one guy that was being interviewed in the video said it was like she knew it was scientific, but one off. Like she didn't understand nuclear physics or didn't understand particle collision physics, but she knew it was something that kind of had to do with that. So it's filtered through your own life experiences, your own knowledge, your own base of what you know. I'll give you an example of what remote viewing is like. We've got another project that I'm working on that was a forensic target, and it was a missing woman. We don't do very many of those. Those are difficult to work, and it's kind of a cliche to give a remote viewer like, oh, find the missing child. So we give those targets few and far between, but 2 years ago we worked one. And one of our members said, hey, I have a target that needs to be worked. Can you work this? I said, okay. So I took the target ID and I sat down at my house. And the first experience I had with the target was like, oh, dread, fear, helplessness. Oh, okay. Calm down. So then I saw an area of a sloping hill near water. And then I heard a thudding sound of like flesh hitting rock or something. And in the course of working this target for an hour, I realized that it was a woman who had had something traumatic happen to her. And I knew there was a guy that was carrying a body down a hill. And in that moment, when you remote view, you emulate the target. So your consciousness goes to the target and your consciousness absorbs the awareness, the feelings, whatever. You become entrained with whatever's happening. You emulate that target. So if there's a person there feeling fear, you feel fear. And I felt the feeling of this murderer as he was disposing of this poor woman's corpse. And it was the most disturbing session I've ever done, because he had no emotion for what he had done. There was no caring that he had taken a human life. It was a pure psychopathic, like, I have to clean up this mess. Oh, damn it. How do I get rid of this? How do I throw this trash away? And just to think like he thought. And it was doubly disturbing because I didn't know really what the target was. I was blind to it. And I thought, why am I thinking these thoughts? Is something wrong with me? And then I was given feedback and I was told it was the missing woman, and I had remote viewed the murderer. But yeah, you can know things about a target and a location experientially that's outside of your knowledge base, but it's interpreted through who you are. Very complex thing.
Some of that story reminds me of the 1970s movie called Brainstorm. I don't know if you ever saw that, where basically scientists are attempting to record through some brain apparatus, record human experience so it can be replayed for other humans to experience, and they accidentally record someone's death. And then there's terrible ramifications when that's played back by another human being. But it just made me think of that.
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story now that you bring that up. My instructor, Glenn Wheaton, who was the Special Forces Intelligence, and I'll tell you another, I got a couple interesting stories about him, but he and some of his buddies are now retired, and they do very interesting work on like what interests them, what kind of targets will they work. And one project that they've been working on is, what is the future of remote viewing? How will remote viewing evolve in the coming decades, and how will it be done? And what he says will happen is, they're going to be able to implant electrodes in the human brain. You'll have a viewer that will have like a helmet or an extension of their brain. It's not exactly like a helmet, but it's something that's somehow neurally wired to your brain, so that what you're seeing will be broadcast on a screen, so that the observers will be able to see what you're seeing. They've done experiments with this where they put electrodes in a cat's brain and they can see what a cat has seen. I think if I don't know what the search term would be on a search engine or Google, but you you can look up like electrode cat brain. I believe in the future it will be like that movie, that they will have remote viewers and they'll put them in a special chamber and get them cooled down and have them view, and they'll be wired up so that what they're seeing experiencing will be recorded. That'll be interesting.
It certainly will. All actually reminds me of yet another movie. Actually, it's funny how prescient some sci-fi films can be, but there's a David Cronenberg film called Scanners. You're familiar with that?
Yeah.
Now, in that film, not only are these specially gifted, I guess you would call it, human beings able to read other people's minds, but they can probe machines and inert objects and systems, for example, electrical system, telephone network. And as I understand it, in remote viewing, it's not just necessarily about time and space and place, but that you can probe machines and processes.
All information is there and available. You know, Hitomi in my video remote viewed the collision of subatomic particles and took that into the consciousness. I mean, it seems she did. I don't say she did. I can't say definitively, but she may have, you know, made a, this whole reality may just be consciousness. You know, we might be, as Thomas Campbell says, we might be playing a video game that we're all creating right along as we go along out of our own consciousness.
Well, in this week in the news, I don't know if it's cropped up on your side of the Atlantic or indeed Pacific, but there was a story that did the rounds in Huffington Post and places like that, but also all over the certainly UK media. And I don't remember the headline, but it was along the lines of latest scientific discovery suggests universe may be holographic. And it's not a completely new idea, of course, but the fact that, I mean, that's the most mainstream coverage I've ever seen that sort of story get.
It is starting to leak out. I saw that story also. I sent it to all my remote viewing friends.
And what's interesting about that is it ties in with what you've just been saying and what is covered in the documentary that you just produced. Basically, that not only would everything fundamentally be consciousness, but that in terms of the reality that we are perceiving, that we've got it the wrong way around with regards to consciousness and matter. Basically, that what scientists have been trying to figure out, evolutionary biologists, physicists, the whole lot, is how does consciousness arise from matter? It's the so-called hard problem for physicists. But if you consider it the other way around and consider the possibility that matter arises from consciousness, a lot of pieces start to fall into place.
Yeah, it may be backwards, as I said in the video. Oh, let me, speaking of the video, can I give the link? There are some clips that people can watch for free at www.rvivideos.com. So rvivideos.com, RVI videos. And the documentary itself is for sale on amazon.com. If you go to amazon.com and type in Hitomi and the God Particle, Hitomi, Hitomi and the God Particle. It's a pretty interesting video. I had fun making it, and I don't claim to have all the answers, but it raises some interesting questions. It's a really interesting field, remote viewing, and the whole consciousness exploration is. The physics of it is beyond me, but I know what I've experienced as a remote viewer. So,
at the end of her session, Hitomi's rather drained, exhausted by the whole thing. And we mentioned earlier her comment about that they need to look at consciousness, which is what we're saying here now. And that concept I mentioned just a moment ago about matter arising from consciousness, that you start to look into that, and some of the researchers that are working on this idea, whether they're scientists or whether they're philosophers or whatever, somewhere in between, this fits in with so many things that ancient traditions are telling us about how the universe came into being, perhaps in an allegorical or sort of cloaked in mythical language, magical thinking, but it really does make sense of many, many things.
Like you said, ancient teachings. Now, the remote viewing method that I learned was taught by Green Berets. I mean, these guys are tough as nails, special forces, salute the flag, you know, they're not new age type people. They are very down to earth, tough military men. There is a advanced protocol that they teach that teaches you how to get into an altered state. It's very similar to what monks have been doing for centuries. You know, they might chant Om, Om. What the Green Berets did was just, they called it off-gassing, where you would breathe out for two cycles and then take a shallow breath and then breathe out, and that puts you into an altered state. They would never call it meditation or chanting or Oms. They gave it their own military jargon, but it's essentially the same thing that monks and seers and shaman have done throughout history. So there's really not that much new. Although the U.S. military did develop a pretty nifty way to train this to people. It's quite brilliant what they did. And I was lucky enough to meet a man who realized that the U.S. taxpayer had paid for it, that he should pass it along. He said, "This is too valuable to be kept in secret. I want to share it with the world, and I don't want to make money off of it." So I was lucky to meet him.
That movie, Men That Stare at Goats, kind of made light of military involvement with anything that might be classed as supernatural. But the military don't tend to get into things in terms of technologies, meaning we can call this a technology, you know, that are going nowhere. I mean, yes, there's a long history of big budget military things going wrong, you know, new fighter jets or aircraft carriers or whatever. But in terms of this sort of research, if they don't get results, they'll just drop it. And they clearly...
I asked Glenn years ago, I said, "Glenn, would yes or no, would U.S. Army Special Forces Green Berets use something if it didn't work?" "No, we would only use something that works." "Okay. Would they use something if they didn't understand how it works?" She says, "No." So I said, so the U.S. military understands how remote viewing works, how consciousness really functions. He said, "Yeah, pretty much." So they know. They know a lot more than they're letting on. Here's an interesting thing, Greg. There is, I think, how can I put this? I think a watered down version of remote viewing was released to the public. Well, I know so. They knew this was going to get out, so they did a controlled release. They gave us a way that sort of kind of works, but there are more advanced techniques. There's something to do with biofeedback and tones that enhance your consciousness that is still secret, is still classified, and they can't tell us. Because I've asked my teacher over and over again over the years, "Glenn, there's something to do with biofeedback and frequencies," and he will just change the subject. He won't answer me. He just will say, "Hey, how about the latest football game?" You know, I think that the military and the government could take me and apply something to me to make me an incredible remote viewer. I'm a pretty good remote viewer, but they could make me amazing experiential, and they haven't released that yet. I don't know that for sure, but I believe that. I think that.
It's a shame that if it is the case that more advanced techniques would be sat upon like that and used for, well, you know, we look at it honestly, well, pretty nefarious reasons. When
we couldn't have just any old person looking into everything and knowing all the secrets, could we? That wouldn't be good for the people in charge. I mean, it's dangerous enough what we know about remote viewing. Our group did a project many years ago. We had a guy in our group who was interested in like underground bases, and there's a underground base in Russia, and he tasked that to us, and we did a really good job. We got really good information. And I later heard a few years later that a Russian attorney contacted the group and said, you've put some information up that you need to take down. Excuse me? He says, yeah, your project here, you need to take some of this down because it's too sensitive. As well. And they said, look, we will take legal action against you. And if legal action doesn't work, we will take other action against you. So we took it down. I mean, we've actually done some stuff that was pretty sensitive. We try to keep it. We don't do anything that would violate national security. We don't do targets that are of prurient interest, like, you know, not spying on people of a, you know, some affair they're having behind their wife's back, and anything that's too disturbing. So we have guidelines for what boundaries we stay in.
One piece of research that I came across recently doing an interview was the idea that, I know a lot of work's going on in the field of DNA, not just the Human Genome Project, but just with all, you know, what we would call alternative researchers trying to get to the root of what, you know, reality and how matter did stem from energy, all the questions we've been talking about, really. And the idea has come up with the possibility of DNA having some form of consciousness, and it's trying to tell us something, basically. For example, not quite a number of people who've had ayahuasca experiences in the Amazon have reported DNA-type formations that reveal themselves as snakes communicating messages to them. So I'm just wondering, I don't know if anyone's done any remote viewing work, because we talked about you can get into the subatomic realm, remote viewing work, you know, at that level, at the DNA level of life.
Well, we haven't done that. You could, but the viewer might not understand what they were perceiving. I mean, you would need a very advanced viewer, and it might come up as allegorical or symbolic in their session. I was just looking through some sessions. We were filing some the other day. I drew, what I saw was a square structure with two round things on top and what looked like a doorway. And it seemed to me to be the size of a building. So I drew it to scale of a building, and then my conscious mind said, well, there's a building, there must be people walking in and out of this door. So I drew people, and when you look at what was tasked, it was a gun disguised as a package of cigarettes. So it was the size of a package of cigarettes, but it was a gun with bullets, and I drew its shape and I drew everything to scale. But it wasn't a building, it was a cigarette package gun. So I saw it and drew it exactly, but I didn't understand that it was just this small little mechanical thing. It was a mistake on my part, it was an assumption made by my conscious mind. But it's funny to look at it like, oh, you drew this, and there's people walking in and out of this building, but the building is shaped exactly like this little secret gun that spies use to disguised as a pack of cigarettes. So if you gave someone DNA and whether DNA has consciousness, wow, that would be an interesting target. Might have to give that out someday.
Well, do let me know what results you get back.
Yeah. The one thing that if any remote viewers hear this interview, I can't give that target out now for 6 months, because you cannot have any concept or any idea about what the target is. So If someone heard me, like if Hitomi heard this interview and then I said to her, "Oh, Hitomi, I have a great target for you. Will you work it for me?" I couldn't give her DNA because she's polluted.
Mm-hmm. You know? You were saying earlier about this ability that we all have that's sort of been trained out of us in a way, or has been discouraged from it over quite a long period of time. Do you believe that if this is a sort of a lost ability or a latent ability, that this is something that human beings have always been able to do? I mean, I know that'd be a very difficult question to answer, but have you ever got any sense from other times or even other world ages? Because, you know, we think human Earth began after the Ice Age, but who knows how many
it's
ages.
4 billion years old. We've been here many times.
Yeah. So this is something that perhaps in the past, maybe even the distant past, that was an ability that people, human beings, were able to use routinely.
I think so. And I think that even all of us modern day people, if you wrote down every thought you had and then analyzed it and why did you think it, you would see connections. Like I talked to you at the very beginning of the interview about, did you ever think of a friend and then they call you or know something and it happened? Like a friend of my instructor, Glenn, said to me yesterday, "Hey, have you heard from Cheryl lately?" And I said, "No, I haven't talked to her in a couple of months." Well, I got home and I had an urgent email from her. And I called up Glenn and I said, why did you ask about Cheryl? I had an urgent message from her. She needed to talk to me. Had she talked to you? And he said, "No, I haven't talked to her in a few months, but I just felt like you needed to talk to her." I think all humans, we live in such a noisy age. We've got so much coming at us with the internet, with our cell phones, our smartphones, and screens everywhere, and Wi-Fi everywhere, and cellular signals everywhere. There is a tremendous amount of noise in our modern society. Still, you are getting thoughts from your subconscious that you don't recognize. And if you learn to pay attention, you would realize that this is a natural thing that we're all doing. And people who are natural psychics, they just do it naturally a little better and have a better way to listen. But it's a skill that all of us possess. Not necessarily skill, it's just a natural thing. We all have a subconscious awareness that has that other foot in that other reality. And we can all learn how to listen to that.
Well, just as we begin to bring things to a close for today, Dick, perhaps you could leave us with your thoughts on, you know, we've discussed the negative uses of remote viewing, or at least from certain perspectives, negative by the military, and how remote viewing can be useful in dangerous situations or in criminal situations to bring some benefit or help there. But there are many other uses beyond mere curiosity that remote viewing can be employed. I'm just wondering, thinking about the positive aspects of it.
The positive aspect comes from the individual person experiencing it personally for himself or herself. That I'll tell you, the most profound target I ever did was one of the first ones I ever did, and it was a very mundane target. Someone said, "Okay, I'm going to give you a target. Work it." And so I saw a structure and I said, "It's cold outside, but it's warmer inside, and there's a man, and he's..." And then I looked and I did this exercise and I had this little dream. A little movie played in my head. In the movie, I came to a stop and I saw a man in a gray overcoat walking through a department store looking at suit coats and dress shirts. And I watched him walk through and touch a coat and feel the fabric and walk by and disappear. And I came to and I realized I was at my desk, and I drew that and I thought, what was that? What did I just see? That was like did I fall asleep and have a dream, or was that a hallucination? It was like a movie in front of my eyes of a man in a coat. And so I was given the feedback. I said, what was the target? And they said, well, it was a guy that went to a military PX. It was on the second floor, and it was like a men's department store where they were selling men's clothes, and the guy walked through there. And the hair on my arm stood up, and it was at that moment that I realized that there is a record of everything we do, everything we think, every action. It still resonates, and that we are more, there's more to us than just our physical body, that everything we do is somehow recorded and persists and can be seen. So every time you hurt someone or are nice to someone or do something kind and giving or something bad and criminal and hateful, there's a record of that and it persists. And once you remote view, you realize that and it changes you as a person. And I think that's the positive. That's the positive thing. And also realizing that the universe and the world is not as they taught us. It's different. Science is not telling us the truth about our true nature.
Excellent. Well, Dick, we've already mentioned your DVD, which to say is Hitomi and the God Particle, and where people can see some clips from that or buy a copy if they wish to. But perhaps people want to find out a bit more in general, you'd like to share details with your website and just anything else you'd like to put out there.
Okay, the website of the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild is hrvg.org. If you just search for Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild, and that's a nonprofit. And in the headings on that website, there is a library section, a project session. And in the library session is a lot of videos that are free. You can click and see me giving presentations of examples of remote viewing. If you look up Dick Allgaier remote viewing on YouTube, there's an example of me doing a session. Just do some searches for remote viewing and Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild. We're currently not teaching any classes, but we may do some in the future. It's a very interesting field of study. It's the most fascinating thing I've seen some interesting things as a journalist over 38 years, but nothing as interesting as remote viewing.
Wonderful. Well, Dick, thank you so much for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Thank you, Greg. It's been an interesting conversation. Keep up the good work. And good luck with your show.
Well, folks, that's it for another week. As ever, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please check out the website. That's legalizefreedom.com, legalize-freedom.com, where you'll find an archive of programs offering alternative views on a wide range of topics, including world affairs, politics and economics, science and technology, religion and spirituality, conspiracy, and alternative history. You can also browse and buy a range of books and DVDs from our guests, and if you're feeling generous, make a donation to help keep the site up and running. Until next time, I'm Greg Moffat, and you've been listening to LegalizeFreedom.com.